We will win.
Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Michael Morris. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I do hope that my Scottish dog is not interrupting the seamless listening for our viewers and listeners.
Indeed, but I'm sure they'll forgive us if there's just a bark or two. And we're also joined today by Mr. Okay. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you doing?
Well, after the weekend, I'm not sure.
yes. Well. Indeed, and I must say it's I'm both thankful and regretful sometimes that the news is so interesting, certainly we've had a couple of busy weeks here. So our first story is, of course, this executive order that was signed by Donald Trump, president of the U.S., over the weekend. I'll just read a bit from the executive order itself. Section 1, purpose: in a shocking disregard of its citizens' rights, the Republic of South Africa has recently enacted the Expropriation Act 13 of 2024 to enable the government of South Africa to seize ethnic minority Afrikaners' agricultural property without compensation. This act follows countless government policies designed to dismantle equal opportunity in employment, education, business, and hateful rhetoric and government actions fueling disproportionate violence against racially disfavored landowners. In addition, South Africa has taken an aggressive position towards the United States and its allies, accusing Israel, not Hamas, of genocide in the International Court of Justice, and reinvigorating its relations with Iran to develop commercial activity, military and nuclear arrangements. And Section 2, policy: it is the policy of the United States that as long as South Africa continues these unjust and immoral practices that harm our nation, the United States has not provided shall not provide aid or assistance to South Africa, and that the United States shall promote the resettlement of Afrikaner refugees escaping government-sponsored race-based discrimination, including racially discriminated property confiscation, and that there shall be assistance provided to said refugees. It's a little bit vague on what exactly any of that means, and there's some sort of weirdness in this. This was responded to by AfriForum, who have been included a lot in the public debate on this, saying that they were very happy that Trump had pointed out racism against Afrikaners and injustice in South Africa, but they thought that it was a good thing that they thought that it wasn't super useful. This whole refugee thing, they said that Afrikaners' place is in Africa and that their culture would not survive in the U.S. According to Kali Creel, the CEO of AfriForum, Afrikaners will only be able to survive as a cultural community on local soil. Immigration only offers an opportunity for Afrikaners who are willing to risk potentially sacrificing their descendants' cultural identity as Afrikaners. There's been also a lot of sort of mainstream pushback on this, saying that it's kind of a continuation of the debate we've been having in South Africa about the expropriation bill. There's a pushback from the government saying essentially that, no, the expropriation bill is no big deal. Stop worrying about it. Why is the Americans getting all upset about it? We need to go and explain to them, and we'll talk about that later, what's going on here. And, yeah, I don't exactly know where to talk about or how to kind of approach this executive order. I think there's sort of two things that come in to mind here, and Terence, I'll start with you. The first is that I think this is kind of, in a sense, the end result of, in part at least, the end result of the ANC's policy towards the US over the last couple of decades. And this thing is kind of framed as being against the Expropriation Act, and then sort of stapled underneath that is the, and also South Africa is anti-us and anti-Israel. Kind of underneath. So it's a little bit of a jumble in terms of its direction here. And I do think that the ANC's hostile stance towards the Americans has definitely played a role in this. I think the consequences of this are probably that we get kicked out of AGOA. I mean, although no one said that definitively, that does seem to be the direction we're heading in. But then there's also this sort of, I don't know how to make it, it's kind of a bizarre thing about focusing the whole debate here on racial discrimination. And one of the many problems with the expropriation, the Expropriation Act shouldn't target a race of people. That would be wrong. But it actually doesn't target a race of people. It targets all South Africans. That's one of the many reasons that every South African should be concerned about. It's because all of our rights are reduced by this thing. Terence, you can see I'm stumbling around a bit here. What do you make of all this?
Well, I think that stumbling around is kind of what one does when we're confronted, with a big sledgehammer. And I think Trump wields that, I would actually say, quite skillfully, in terms of resetting attention. Now, when I heard this, I was stunned, because I think that what he has effectively done in South Africa is to make himself the center of the story. This is a pernicious law. It is ripe for abuse. I think it takes place within a particular context where its abuse is probably inevitable. But the way that Trump has framed it, and also simply because Trump doesn't have a great many supporters among the commentariat, it's been to make him the centerpiece. I mean, I found it quite interesting that news outlets that I think would be, I don't think I'd be at risk of saying that, would be very averse to giving something like Orania any kind of positive coverage, all of a sudden, showcasing how they're not going to be taking this up, and finding an Afrikaner farmer to say that he doesn't feel threatened. Which is a departure of the narrative that there is systemic abuse on South Africa's farms. But yes, look, I think that what Trump is probably doing is jumbling a bunch of issues. From that, we will need to try and see what we can disaggregate. And I think that while expropriation without compensation is an issue, and I think certainly it would concern American investors, I think that should concern us too, since America is a major source of investment. What this probably has a lot more to do with is, as you say, the geopolitics of it. South Africa has been damning America since the early 2000s, but with declining diplomatic capacity to actually nuance its position. So if you go to the ANC's website, you can still find the state page that talks about how protesting against the 2003 Gulf War is a duty of all humanity, and it's American aggression against the people of Iraq. Now, at least at that stage, you had a fairly serious government. Thabo Mbeki was able to speak with authority to different world leaders. And I think you had a more robust diplomatic service. None of that exists anymore. And to say, well, we're going to go and explain it, I remember P.W. Buerta saying exactly the same thing. Only we could explain our position, everything would be fine. Sometimes your position's bad and you just don't get to explain it. And I think that the South African state, as a state, and the ANC as a party, have made it very clear that they are at best ambivalent about America, but I would say to some extent that they despise America. Think of someone like Mvula Mokonyane saying that they want to change Sandton Drive to Leila Khaled Drive, as an act, that is an act of aggression. So, right. Yes, if you're going to trumpet it sooner or later, someone might actually take you seriously.
Yes. Now, it's there's sort of like a whole bunch of things all kind of rolled into this executive order that are not really like fully sort of spelled out. They're kind of sort of alluded to. So there's the Expropriation Act, which is directly addressed. But then it's sort of tied together with the issue of farm murders, and then it's also tied together with BEE, and then it's also tied together with the anti-American policies of the government. So it actually kind of makes this sort of difficult a little bit to disentangle, because I mean, one of the points I think that we have made in some of our press statements on this is that a policy like BEE hurts everyone across the board, not just Absolutely. White people, not just colored people, not just Indian people, but Black South Africans too. And that's why I get a bit, I worry that, and I mentioned this, I think, last week on the show, is that the sort of framing of this whole debate now is getting a bit sort of muddled. And also now, of course, you've got lots of people who are very happy to take the opportunity to go and bash Trump, because I think they've wanted to for a long time, are now sort of getting stuck in on this in ways that I think are almost endorsing the Expropriation Act, which is very frustrating. Michael, what do you make of all this?
I agree with the points you have both raised. I think that long history of South Africa's hostility to a key partner of ours in the West, and, you know, lest it be forgotten, America had a very, very strong role to play during the apartheid years. All kinds of Americans invested a great deal in supporting South Africans, helping South Africa. And for the most part, very constructively, even the term constructive engagement, I mean, that was an American term. But even before then, participating in efforts to try and get a better future for South Africa. So it set against that background, I think, alone, the hostility of the ANC government since 1994 is very stark. Having said that, I think, I mean, when I saw the executive order, I think a colleague of ours shared it on a WhatsApp group at something ridiculous hour, like 5 o'clock on Saturday morning. I happened to be getting up early to go for a swim with my wife and family at the Dalebrook tidal pool in False Bay. This is a wonderful thing to do on a Saturday morning at 6 o'clock, even though it's freezing cold. And I happened to see it, and my heart sank. And what I thought then is what I still think now, is that it's possibly the worst backfire I've seen in politics for a long time, if only because of the domestic element of it, the fact that it will undermine or open up a new front for people like us who are arguing against expropriation without compensation, arguing against race law, arguing against all these bad things that have been going on, and at a point where we almost feel we're at the cusp of actually being able to make some gains, and now here comes Mr. Donald Trump and his sidekick, Chubby Cheeks Wonder Boy Elon Musk, who is saying, you know, we've got to go for ethnic Afrikaners. He's talking about citizens' rights. This is actually a distasteful contradiction, even in that executive order. Are they talking about citizens' rights, or are they talking about this little ethnic problem? And the whole thing is just terrible. It's turned South Africans, reasonable, sensible South Africans, against this whole thing, and that contaminates our argument, makes it so much more difficult for us to make this case. I think I can't remember where it was, Terence, you raised the thing a little while ago, maybe in our discussions at the weekend, about, you know, this idea of punishing citizens by withdrawing aid. This is very like the sanctions debate in the 80s. Which the IRR, in fact, opposed on the grounds that it was damaging the wrong people and threatening the wrong people. You want to, you know, tackle the decision makers, not the victims of the decision makers. So there's an element of that. I don't think it's quite the same today as it was then. But the main thing is really to focus that our job is now, you know, not to be not to throw up our hands in horror and say, well, you know, we're defeated, or this is too terrible for words. It's something we've got to live with. And to focus on those citizens' rights, which is the phrase that I think appeared first in the executive order. And I have here only to refer you to the report of the January 2025. Yeah, I mean, literally a few days ago. Report of the Center for Risk Analysis, our research arm, so to speak. This is and specifically this quality of life index, which they do every year. They've been doing it since 2017. It's an index of 10 a basket of 10 things, adults with a degree or better, unemployment rate, monthly expenditure levels exceeding 10,000 or more, household tenure status, whether the houses are owned but not yet paid off to a bank. In other words, you've got a bond and you can afford to pay a mortgage. Household access to pipe water, electricity, basic sanitation facility, refuse removal, medical aid, and murder rate. And if you put in, and this is a wonderful survey that's done every year, the Center for Risk Analysis, I highly recommend it. It looks at the quality of life by province, by race, and it tells you a story about South Africa. And here we find the black population performed the worst with a final QALY score of 4.6, trailing its white, Indian, Asian, and colored counterparts who had scores of 7.4, 6.7, and 5.7. So it's 7.4 versus 4.6 in stark black and white terms. And so that tells you the story of South Africa that we are not talking about when we make a case for property rights, when we make a case for economic growth, which we do, and particularly strenuously today with the unemployment rate of in one province. I mean, and Nicholas, we were talking about this last week. The highest one is 54% in Northwest, I think. All the others are just about, with the exception of the West Cape, are above 44. Very, very high unemployment rates. With considering all these things, our job is to focus on our domestic argument. We've got to convince these people that forget about Trump. Don't be drawn into that weird kind of argument about Afrikaner refugees and all the rest of it. We have got a job on our hands, and it's up to us. America, it's not America's job. To think that we should count on America is in itself a problem. We've got to count on ourselves. We're the ones who've got to find the solution here.
On that last point, I think there's a tendency in politics all over the world to hope for a silver bullet. And I think some of the discussions previously about the IMF changing South Africa's policy when it ran out of money is similar. You can look this endlessly. If you look hard enough, you'll find in any country's politics, there's always these discussions of there's going to be this one thing that if we can just get that one thing, we're going to win completely. And I do very much fear because I think it often puts politics, people's efforts then get wasted. I think it's important to realize, just as you said, Michael, that there may be some use to be gained for South Africans from Trump's executive order here, but fundamentally, if we want this country to work properly and for its people to have a prosperous future, we're going to have to do it ourselves very much. Yeah. Terence, let's talk a little bit about South Africa's response to this. So we've alluded to it a bit. There is this sort of diplomatic response that was announced by the president in the State of the Nation address, saying that South Africa was going to go back to the United States. He didn't actually say the United States, but he said countries around the world, and clearly the United States was one of those. And we're going to explain our position. I'm going to explain our position on EWC, or on the expropriation bill, as the government is very keen to call it, not EWC. And that this will solve everything. And there's been an awful lot of sort of this kind of idea that, it's everyone is just getting sidetracked by misinformation. And therefore, if we just go and explain to everyone that they will understand it. I think I see now even Minister of Agriculture, John Steenhuisen, says that he was willing to do whatever it takes to sell South Africa to the world, that it was critical that a delegation be sent to Washington to explain South Africa's policy position urgently. He said, quote, "I'm a member of the Government of National Unity. This government is determined to have economic growth and jobs, and I will play whatever role I can to protect agriculture jobs as well as other jobs. We joined the GNU for Economic Growth and Jobs agenda, and this imperils that agenda significantly if these types of retributions and actions are taken against South Africa." I mean, that's true, but it's also, I think, missing the point, which is you can't explain that the expropriation bill doesn't hurt property rights in South Africa. You can't explain that you didn't take Israel to the International Criminal Court of Justice, who is an American ally. You can't explain that you aren't actually naming the street in Sandton after someone who's extremely anti-American. You can't there's no explanation. The Americans just disagree with us on these things, and you have to kind of meet them on those terms, because otherwise you're not going to make any headway whatsoever. You can go and wine and dine everyone you want in Washington. It's not going to make a jot of difference to the policy towards us. You have to actually engage on the merits and say, well, no, here's why the expropriation bill doesn't actually hurt property rights. And of course, you know, it does. So why don't, and here's a suggestion, a simple suggestion to the government, amend the expropriation bill or act so that it doesn't destroy property rights in this country, and then suddenly a lot of the pressure will be off. Terence, your thoughts?
Well, look, I think that there's, as I like to say, a lot of things going on there. I think I'm reminded of P.W. Burton in the 1980s. If only the world would understand what we're doing, everything would be fine. It's amazing how things. Oh, we seem to have lost Michael. It's amazing how things come, you know, turn full circle. No, I don't think that it is possible to explain your way out of everything. The point about diplomacy is not to, you know, high five one another and, you know, and say how, you know, how we agree, and if only you understand us, you'll be fine with it. It's also to deal with some of those those points of disagreement. And I think one of the problems is that we just don't have a diplomatic service that's up to that. I remember in 2018 when President Trump opposed decided the one issue he absolutely had to stake his presidency on was running property rights down. He decided, well, he's going to send these investment envoys, and I think two of them, one of whom was Trevor Manuel, if I remember correctly, came back and said, look, you've got a huge problem with this. People don't like the idea that South Africa's signature policy issue now is to take your stuff without paying for it. This is actually not rocket science. You don't have to be Elon Musk to understand it. As long as we're talking about old Muskrat, let's remember that his comments about BEE, love my item, were correct. You know, first of all, it is racist if you understand racism as discriminating to someone's advantage, someone's disadvantage. Now, I know that there's all sorts of clever sociologists who will say that, well, that's not really what racism is, et cetera, et cetera. I tend to be old school about these things. But secondly, both the European and the American Chamber of Commerce have publicly said that BEE is a massive disincentive to doing business here. And certainly, we've spoken to embassies and businesses from Asia who just cannot understand it. It's like, why do you want to say no to somebody who wants to come and do business in your country? It's like, it's insane. But you know, if that is off the table, then that's more self-inflicted pain.
Indeed. And I think that's the important thing to keep in mind, is that there are, you know, we must keep up the fight against these bad policies. And that these bad policies are the thing that's causing the problem. All this other stuff is just kind of the
thing,
the mess around it.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, and let's move on to something.
Let me just say that I see that the president has spoken to Elon Musk and they've agreed to address disinformation. I would just like to say I'm grateful to Elon Musk for telling President Ramaphosa that he has a problem.
Yes, that is. It's interesting. I don't think Musk has actually commented on that discussion.
That was something that worried me, you know, that if he didn't immediately repudiate it, it almost puts or allows the idea to settle in the public mind that in fact there was disinformation and it was all wrong and it was. But I agree with you, Terence. I mean, on the Starlink BEE thing, that's just a clear, and I think that's what specifically he was referring to. He wasn't referring to Larry Christian. That is simply a racist ownership law. If you're telling a company that wants to invest, they've got to give away 30% to a BEE thing. That's simply what it is. Exactly. And I think that's a very valid point to make. And we should be able to, whatever we think of him, we should be able to acknowledge the importance of that. The thing that I was thinking about was actually, I mean, here's the guy who took over X to promote free speech, and he put on X at some point, I think at the weekend, a suggestion that that Julius Malema should be charged as an international criminal for talking about cutting the throat of whiteness. Now, cutting the throat of whiteness sounds like a pretty grim thing, but in fact, it should be defended as we would, as liberals, good liberals, we would defend that as free speech. And here's this ironic thing of him putting this stuff out into the X sphere.
I do think that sort of language has to be dialed down, because
then you fight it. But free speech
boils the pot.
Yeah, but free speech is the route to confronting it. You know, not.
I agree with you 150%. But you know, I've heard this repeatedly over the last week that there is something wrong with a human rights based system that says, you know, that sort of thing's okay because of historical context, but you know, microaggressions on a WhatsApp group in Pretoria Girls High is something that needs to become a national scandal. The thing is that it is about the cohesion of society.
Yeah, yeah. But we fight both, you see? That is the liberal position. Yeah. We fight both.
Yes.
So not and one and
let's move on to the EFF, actually. You say it's funny, it's because Musk does seem to have turned his attention very specifically on Julius Malema and his comments, which I suspect is a bit of a bit of an extra blow to Julius now that he's probably getting a lot of nastiness said about him on social media, because he's dealing with a lot of problems in his own backyard. One of his lieutenants, Ntlozi, who he had fallen out with a while ago, has left the EFF, saying resigning after being a member for 10 years, and you know, one of the top leaders of the EFF. He fell out with Malema some time ago, at least about a year ago, and they charged him with a number of things. They charged him with working with MK, and they charged him with apparently not telling Malema that he knew that Shivambu was going to join ship to MK. He was prevented from going to the EFF's internal conference where they had their coronation of Malema. Again, you know, it's one of those very democratic events when the main opposition is not allowed to show up. But it's interesting to see what he's doing now. Firstly, Ntlozi gives a sort of a slightly backhanded compliment to AfriForum by saying, quote, "I'm leaving party politics and will contribute to academia. It's time somebody did for the people what AfriForum is doing for Afrikaners. That is civil society space that one is having a conversation and thinking about." He then goes on to defend Ramaphosa, saying that in contrast to what his own party or his own ex-party has said about Ramaphosa as being a puppet of white interests, he said, no, I was raised in a household where Ramaphosa was, you know, said to be acting in the interests of capital and white monopoly capital and all that. But actually, the Bella Bill, the Gaza matter, the Expropriation Act, the NHI, and all these policies have, quote, "disrupted the domestic and global white capitalist establishment." So, I mean, Michael, it's kind of funny, this, because he's clearly angling for a job in the ANC. It's like, it's not like, you know, Ramaphosa has suddenly taken a super turn against markets in the last 5 seconds. This has actually been the policy of the ANC for a long time. And I think this is kind of, he's suddenly sort of rediscovered that, no, actually the ANC and EFF were largely on the same page, which they, you know, they have been on a lot of issues for a long time. What do you make of this? It's kind of bizarre, but I guess it's just the ongoing collapse of the EFF's top structures.
Yeah, indeed. And you can't help imagining he's looking at Floyd Shivambo's clearly premature move to a party that's now got financial difficulties and appears to be, kind of trundling down a reckless path. And thinking to himself, well, you know, I can't stay where I am because this outfit is not doesn't have a future. But yeah, he's got to make this accommodation. He's got to try and find a route back to the old home. Just while you were talking, I mean, talking about his backhanded compliment to AfriForum, I was reminded of a comment from a political analyst, I think at Nelson Mandela University, but I can't remember now, Dr. Ngoma Mtinka, who's told Cape Talk, I think, this morning, that it's a sad situation that 30 years into democracy, we find ourselves having to depend on foreign aid. One imagines that that's very much the kind of sentiment that some of the more sensible people at AfriForum would express as well, that we certainly point out as being, you know, close to the point. So, yeah, I mean, the EFF, I've always argued that South Africa is not an especially revolutionary kind of country, that the EFF was never destined to be this kind of great threatening thing that a lot of people thought it was going to be. And I think we're seeing that playing out now. You know, people are not going to, you know, at this moment, they're not when there's so much at stake and the prospects are quite positive. They're not going to be reckless enough to choose revolutionaries to be their political lodestar. So this is quite an encouraging thing, in fact, I think.
Yeah, I over the years I've had many arguments with people who would tell me that Julius Malema is going to be, you know, either the next president of South Africa or a future president of South Africa. I've always thought that was not going to be the case, unless it was via something like a coup or something. But
yes,
Terence, final words to you.
Well, I think that what Malema tried to create was a sort of orthodox Marxist Leninist democratic centralist party, and I don't think that works very well with the with South Africa's national character. And I think if you have those sort of impulses, that you can get the ideology from Jacob Zuma, although I don't think most of his supporters voted on ideology, but you can also get it with an avuncular guy who sings well and apparently is most, you know, Helen Sillis is the most charming man she's ever met. She's much more likable. And I think, you know, like I do think there's something else going on here, that South Africa has been cursed as most of post-colonial Africa with the professional politician. People whose aspirations are to sit in a legislature and to, you know, to live their life like that. So yes, you know, when you leave one party, you don't go and, you know, return to your legal practice or, you know, to dealing in maize futures or something. You have to go and, you know, kiss the seat of someone else's trousers to get, you know, to get the same job elsewhere, which is a problem. Which is a major cultural problem, because we live in a political economy in which the political leadership, essentially, it's a case of all you have is a hammer, so everything looks like a nail.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying that he wants to go back into academia, but I think that's I take that with a sort of a pinch of salt. I mean, it may be academia as in attached to the ANC's Revolutionary Council of Discussion or something like that. I don't know, but we'll see. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. Yeah, no, so apologies if I wasn't quite on the ball today. It's a lot going on and a lot to be said about these things. But we have to shut up at some time. So we will, of course, be back tomorrow with the Daily Venture Wrap. Hope you all have a wonderful day, and we shall see you then. Bye-bye, everyone.